While the impending arrival of a new baby is an occasion for joy, pregnancy is also a major stressor on a pregnant person's body. Cardiovascular conditions are one of the most prevalent complications of pregnancy and one of the leading causes of maternal mortality. Welcome to Advancing Health, a podcast from the American Hospital Association. I'm Tom Hederle with AHA Communications. In this podcast, the AHA's Julia Resnick, Director of Strategic Initiatives, explores how Orlando Health is reaching outside its walls to create the conditions for a heart-healthy pregnancy and postpartum for new parents.
My family and I moved from Nigeria when I was 16. You know, I always tell people this, which is, you know, growing up, unlike here in the United States, where I tend to see a lot of joy surrounding pregnancy, surrounding birth. I grew up in a place where when a woman was pregnant, there was joy associated with it. But when it got closer to the time for delivery, there was a lot of fear. There was a lot of uncertainty. There was a lot of prayer groups being brought together to pray that the woman makes it out alive. I lost my lovely aunt while she was having her seventh child from postpartum hemorrhage, which was very devastating. A lot of people here in the U.S., when they think of pregnancy, they obviously, you know, most times think about it, I'm gonna go have the baby come back home. But the truth is that, unfortunately, anybody can lose their life in a pregnancy.
That was Dr. Chinedu Nwabuobi, grounding us in the medical risks inherently involved in pregnancy. He is a maternal fetal medicine physician at Orlando Health Women's Institute, Center for Maternal Fetal Medicine. I'm Julia Resnick, Director of Strategic Initiatives at the American Hospital Association, and this is Beyond Birth, an Advancing Health podcast. Today, we'll be focusing on matters of the heart. Not only is February Valentine's Day, it is also Heart Health Month, a month dedicated to raising awareness of heart health and cardiovascular conditions. Today, we will be exploring cardiovascular health during and after pregnancy, and what hospitals can do to help create the conditions for a heart-healthy pregnancy. So why heart health? Pregnancy is a major stressor on the body, and particularly on the heart. Complicating up to 4 in 100 pregnancies, cardiovascular issues continue to be one of the most common causes of maternal morbidity and mortality. 1 in 3 pregnancy-related deaths in the U.S. are due to cardiovascular problems, and people who are Black, American Indian, or Alaska Native are at higher risk of heart conditions during pregnancy and have a much higher risk of dying during pregnancy or soon after. Hospitals know that creating the conditions for a heart-healthy pregnancy and postpartum period is key to improving outcomes. In this podcast, we'll be exploring how Orlando Health is reaching outside its walls to meet the needs of moms who are at risk of experiencing cardiovascular issues. You'll hear more from Dr. Nwabuobi, as well as Dr. Lori Boardman, Chief Quality Officer at Orlando Health Winnie Palmer Hospital for Women and Babies, Peggy Burgess, founder and CEO of the Center for Change, and Crystal Wilson, a new mom who participated in Orlando Health's telehealth hypertension program after giving birth. We'll start with Dr. Boardman's overview of Winnie Palmer Hospital and the population they serve.
Winnie Palmer is really sort of almost iconic nationwide, and it has been that way because of generally the large volume of patients that we take care of here. So in the last fiscal year of full data that we have, we delivered 14,550 patients under one roof. We take care of 142 neonatal beds, and their occupancy runs around 80 to 90%. So not only do we have a large patient population of persons who are delivering, but we have a lot of sick babies as well. So we have a lot of babies born early and a lot of babies with complex needs. So Winnie Palmer Hospital is a standalone women's hospital. It's an 11-story building. It houses a labor floor of about 28 delivery rooms. It houses 3 floors for postpartum care. We have a floor dedicated to the NICU, which again is large, and you get lost wandering around it because of the number of beds and pods involved. We have a triage area for taking care of those patients coming in with emergency needs. And all the volumes in these sites are quite high.
Dr. Nwabuobi, who you heard from at the beginning, specializes in perinatal cardiovascular health, I spoke with him about the prevalence of heart conditions during and after pregnancy.
About 700 women die each year in the United States because of pregnancy-related complications, right? Like, no death is too little. So 700, that's too many already. And that's, I can imagine with some of the numbers I'm seeing out there, it's probably higher now. The most recent report we have in the United States as far as pregnancy-associated mortality rates, and this is covering from 2007 to 2016, is pointing that there is actually about 16.7 deaths per 100,000 live births. And the top cause of death turns out to be cardiovascular disease, about 26.5%. So on a national scale, that is already quite an alarming number. The volume continues to increase. But when you look, we are talking about chronic hypertension, which is a cardiovascular complication. You're looking at about 8.6% in our African-American patients. You're looking at about 4.7% in our Hispanic patients, and is Hispanic of any race. And you're looking at about 6.2% in our non-Hispanic white. And then when you bring in something like actual pre-existing cardiac disease, about 5.1% in our African-American patients. Let me just say Black patients as a whole, non-Hispanic Blacks, about 3.9% in our non-Hispanic white, and about 3.1% in our Hispanic patients of any race. So again, these are numbers that continue to rise over time, but it's both a local and a national problem that needs all hands on deck.
And you kind of touched on this, but are there certain populations that are particularly at risk for both maternal mortality and maternal morbidity due to cardiovascular issues?
I'm glad some of these things are starting to get a national attention as far as, like, you know, the media is concerned. But this is something that continues to marvel a lot of us, which is the fact that even among the Black race, when you correct for education, when you correct for socioeconomic status, that a patient who is of a Black race continues to have up to fourfold the amount of risk of maternal mortality, including cardiovascular causes of death, when compared to the other races. So that's definitely a factor. Something else that we continue to see to be a population that is at risk for some of these complications are women who are age 35 and above. You know, I tell a lot of my patients, I joke with them and I say, you know, well, age is just a number, but in this case, it's not just a number, because, as you know, your age goes beyond just having knee pain or aches getting out of the bed now. It truly actually counts your chances of making it out of your pregnancy healthy and your baby, you know, healthy as well. So age is a factor that we need to pay even more close attention to. And then there's also the factor of patients who do not have prenatal care. And I think the angle of looking at this is probably thinking about access to care. Most people do not just ignore care completely. There are several factors that limit them deciding that they will get up, go see a physician, go see a midwife, go see whoever that provides their prenatal care to get care, beyond the fact that they are non-compliant. Right? Some people have issues with transportation. Some people do not even have a place to live. Some people are probably juggling two or three jobs to make ends meet and not able to make that appointment. Sometimes we do not have the best clinic hours to actually accommodate all these patients with, you know, some of the things going on in their lives. It's very multifactorial, but again, it comes down to that lack of access. So these three populations with the Black race, the age, and limited access to care can definitely exacerbate the issue of cardiovascular complications in pregnancy.
It is clear that some people are more at risk of experiencing cardiovascular issues during pregnancy than others. To target their efforts and address those inequitable birth outcomes, Dr. Boardman and her team dug into the data.
There's a lot of disparities, and we can talk about a number of them that we see in our data. This just mimics nationwide data. And we know that Black women in particular are disproportionately affected by severe maternal morbidity and mortality. And we know that they, no matter what their background is, no matter how much education they've gotten, no matter how much money they make or where they live, they all have a similar pattern of unfortunately being more likely to have a severe maternal morbidity event in their lives. And you see it on television. And if Serena Williams can't get it done, nobody can. So what we did and what I've done for the last, again, decade is create some dashboards that really allow us to look at different things. So we have a whole set of dashboards around severe maternal morbidity. One is just outlining and knowing what those severe maternal morbidity events are. So our most common forms of severe maternal morbidity tend to be sepsis, which is a severe infection, tend to be renal failure, and then also tend to be more those hemorrhage events. So we do follow those. And the biggest one probably is now hypertension or hypertension related causes. So we look for those rates and we are able to calculate that, but we also want to have a way to identify those patients who are at greater risk for having a severe maternal morbidity event. And one of those is to use something called a comorbidity index. So we've been able to collect that information at the time of delivery. So we have a good idea what our patients are struggling with. For example, if we look at the Black population, that population comes in with a pre-existing history of anemia in almost half of those patients. We know there's opportunity there to follow them more closely. And we know that when we looked at our patients coming back after they've been here for delivery to be readmitted to the hospital, the most common cause was hypertensive disorders. So using that as a way to move forward, we also knew we were in the middle of a pandemic and a lot of people weren't coming into the hospitals or going to practices. So we used the telehealth platform to have a program that we established. While those patients were in the hospital, they delivered. If they had any kind of hypertension problem or they had even had a history of chronic hypertension before they came in, we wanted to follow them when they went home. It did really well. And then a lot of providers were a little skeptical of the program, but then when they saw the results, everybody jumped on board. So at this point, we have everybody involved with our postpartum hypertension program. That means that when those patients go home, we want them to be teed up as much as we can to go home in a healthy way. So the institution started doing something called meds to beds, so that you would go home with your prescription in hand. If you had to be on something for your blood pressure, you were given it so that you didn't have to go to a pharmacy and try to get it delivered to you or have to go through anything. So most patients were able to go home with the prescription. We recruited them before they left the hospital. Our retention rate from recruitment was over 90%. So every month we had about 300 patients and we would have close to almost all of them would be in the program. Initially, we wanted to do day two after you got home and then a day five visit because most of our readmissions were in that first week. But we found out very quickly that we needed to do one the day after you went home. So we caught more people doing that. We were able to engage with them in the platform like we're using. So I'm looking at you and we're having a conversation. We use the platform to not only ask them about their blood pressure, but also to ask them other related questions. We screened all the women for depression and anxiety. We screened everybody for social determinants of health and social drivers of health. And we also talked a lot about breastfeeding because we know that Black women are much less likely to breastfeed. So to provide them the support to do that. Before the patient went home, everybody went home with a cuff and a monitor. And then they were given education about how to know when there's a sign or symptom that you're having that needs to be addressed, who to call. If the blood pressure was sort of in the middle range, they would call the provider. If it wasn't, they would come to the hospital. And for most patients, and particularly for those patients that struggle probably with social support and transportation, they couldn't believe that they could do all of this in their kitchen or their bedroom or wherever they wanted to be. And it just took off that load of having to worry about who's going to drive you. We could even do some of those social determinants, those social drivers of health like hunger and food, getting them delivered directly from one of our community partners, and they would drive that stuff to their home so they could have fresh vegetables and other perishable and non-perishable items. So when I would even be recruiting them, people would be, they'd cry. They just couldn't believe that this kind of program would exist.
Crystal Wilson delivered her third child at Winnie Palmer last year. During the course of her pregnancy, she learned that she had previously undiagnosed cardiovascular issues. After giving birth, her provider knew her heart was at risk for future complications. Enter the Perinatal Hypertension Telehealth Program.
At the hospital, in the recovery room, I met with this woman. I can't remember her name. And she gave me like a monitor for my blood pressure and a scale. And she asked me if I wanted to be involved with some of the programs. And I'm like, you know what? It's not going to hurt. You know, it can do nothing but help me. There were a bunch of programs available. For me, I call it counseling. That for me was a really good coping mechanism. I heard from different moms, you know, I built relationships. So I think it was a really, really good program. The support group was a huge thing. The counseling, the meeting of the moms and all of that. Try to reduce stress, anxiety, which also affects your blood pressure.
The healthcare workers at Winnie Palmer couldn't accomplish this alone. They partnered with a local organization run by our guest Peggy Burgess. Peggy shared the origin story of her organization.
It is a interesting story. I started Center for Change in 2003. I started it because my sister, who was only 48 years old at the time, died of colon cancer. And what amazed me about her reaction to having stage 4 cancer that early is she had no resources. So I wrote a program, and it was called the Renee's Dream Program. And what it was about was educating people who had less resources than she had to find out where they can go for treatment, who they could talk to, what they can do to improve their health, and trying to give her just a sense of security or control.
Out of this original program grew the Center for Change, an organization that leverages community health workers and offers health coaching and self-management courses in chronic disease, amongst other opportunities to improve health.
What we were actually doing was, and I'm so glad Orlando Health had the program design where they had the bus available, they had the clinicians available, and they were part of the program was requiring them to make sure that they go in. And for our end, it was no more than providing that extra push, that extra check-in with them to see, are you doing okay? Are you following through? Why haven't you gone to check on this? Or that really doesn't sound normal to me. I would suggest that you check on this. You'll be surprised at the number of young mothers who are unaware of signs and symptoms and would say, well, I have an appointment in 3 weeks. No, if you have swelling to this extent and it's moving up your legs, something is wrong now. You need to have that checked. And sometimes just that motherly push is enough to say, okay, I'll go. And they know that we're gonna call back because we are their accountability partner in a way, because it is our responsibility to make sure that not only are we educating, but we're there for support. And we're also there to listen. One of the biggest things that the community health workers and we train them to do is please listen to what your client or your patient is saying to you. Listen, because they will give you all the clues that you need to help them. I love the program that we're working with Orlando Health now. But if it was my goal, my goal would be for it to continue to grow so that not just a few of the mothers that are high risk, but all mothers that are high risk would have access to this.
The Center for Change wasn't the only community partner involved in this program. Dr. Boardman spoke to the other groups that have been instrumental in providing holistic wraparound services for new moms.
I'm going to call out a couple that really have done a fabulous job, and one of those is Second Harvest Food Bank. So Second Harvest has been a partner with us through two of the grants that we've gotten from the Florida Department of Health. They've been able to identify those patients. They have a very streamlined process, and they were able, in the one grant, we enrolled about 1,200 women. About 6 months, they had touched 500 patients and their families. with food boxes. They were 90 days of food boxes being delivered every other week for families that really needed it continued. And then another group that we've worked with a number of folks was Christine Certain, who's a perinatal licensed mental health counselor. She's been doing group counseling for patients who screened positive for the depression or anxiety, which is a very common side effect of pregnancy. And in the postpartum period, it manifests itself, but you can see it throughout pregnancy.
Addressing the medical, social, and emotional needs of new moms helps create an environment where they and their babies can thrive. And the perinatal hypertension telehealth program has been incredibly successful at moving the needle on pregnancy and postpartum outcomes. Dr. Boardman shared the impact that it has had on their patient population.
So when you look at participation from patients that have known hypertensive disorders, we recommend coming in for a visit at about 7 to 10 days. White women and Hispanic women, about 80% of those patients will go to them. About 25% of Black patients will go to those visits. With the virtual visit platform, everybody participated in excess of 70 to 75%. So we didn't see those disparities anymore. And if a patient completed at least one of those two visits, the readmission rate was about half of what it was for patients who didn't do that. It's now become embedded in Winnie Palmer. It's part of what we do. It's not a pilot. It's not, you know, a study. It's really how we treat our patients. So that's gone exceedingly well.
Everyone's needs are different. To get the best outcomes and reduce risk, hospitals need to design care with and around patients and create systems that make it easier for new moms to care for themselves and their babies. We'll wrap up with some closing thoughts from Drs. Nwabobi and Boardman.
Like I said earlier, pregnancy being kind of a stressor can unmask this. So just be on top of your care, be very involved, be an advocate for yourself, speak up, ask questions. Those symptoms that you've read online, you've seen on TikTok that you consider are normal should not be normal until it has been completely addressed by your OB provider. So make sure we care for women more before they become pregnant, so that when they become pregnant, there's already that understanding of what the risk is. Hopefully we've mitigated it and how we can make for the best pregnancy outcome for them.
I know from thinking about even creating programs and all this kind of stuff, having the end user be involved in the conversation. And I think listen to our patients, learn from our patients, and then when you start to implement your whatever you're deciding they're going to do, make sure that it aligns with what they want to do, because otherwise we're never going to be successful doing this. And I think they know better than we know what's going to work for them and often for their communities.
Heart Month can be a catalyst for healthcare organizations to reimagine what it takes to create the conditions for a heart-healthy pregnancy. And that will require going beyond the hospital walls to engage patients and collaborate with stakeholders who all share the same goal: healthy moms and healthy babies. By designing pregnancy care around patient needs, recognizing who is at risk of complications, and reducing barriers to support, hospitals can make progress towards reducing maternal morbidity and mortality. A big thank you to all of our speakers, Lori Boardman, Chinedu Nwabobi, Peggy Burgess, and Crystal Wilson. I appreciate everything you do to support the health of your patients and community members. For more resources on improving maternal health, visit www.aha.org/betterhealthformothersandbabies. Thank you for tuning in to this episode of Beyond Birth, an Advancing Health podcast. If you missed any of our previous podcasts, you can find them wherever you listen to your podcasts, and please subscribe to the Advancing Health channel. We'll see you next time.